This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I almost thought we weren't going to speak, so I'm glad we're back on again.
Wow. You know, they can tolerate anything, our listeners, but not missing your slot. So I am very pleased that you are back.
It's been a very busy weekend indeed. On Friday, we had the 14th annual Jerusalem Marathon. And the slogan this year was, Am Yisrael Ratz. It comes, of course, from Am Yisrael Chai. And Am Yisrael Ratz means the nation of Israel runs. And the marathon was started by freed hostage Karina Ariev, who is a resident of the city of Jerusalem. And she ran 5 kilometers along the way with Jerusalem Mayor Moshe Leon. And it was nice for her and to acknowledge her and, of course, all the other freed hostages and to acknowledge the hostages who are yet to be freed. And, of course, the contribution by our IDF soldiers as well. That was the theme. Just another event that took place on Friday very quickly was the announcement by the Academy of the Hebrew language, that they've decided to rename the butterfly, which in Hebrew was originally called Kitmit Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Orange. That was the name of the butterfly. And they've now renamed the butterfly to be Kitmit Ariel, the Ariel Orange. And of course, it's named after Ariel Bibas, who was 4 years old when he was captured to Gaza, and who absolutely love butterflies. And the orange color of this butterfly is very symbolic of the orange that we've become, has become some sort of a symbol of the Bibas family because of the orange hair of the two little boys who were murdered in Gaza. And it's also appropriate that the name Ariel is also another name for Jerusalem. And so altogether, the whole thing just makes a lot of sense. And from now on, that butterfly in Hebrew will be known as Kitmit Ariel.
That is just incredible. Wow. It's just remarkable how it has completely changed the whole, the language, the discourse. It's just quite unbelievable. Let's get on to some of the stories because there's quite a few that I would love to cover. The Hamas has fired a barrage of rockets towards Ashkelon and Ashdod. That was last night. What was the outcome here?
So around 9 o'clock last night, sirens were sounded in the area of Ashdod and Ashkelon. There was a barrage of 10 rockets that were fired from the central part around Gaza City in the Gaza Strip. We are told that 5 of those 10 rockets were intercepted, which means 5 were not intercepted. And we don't have much detail about exactly where the remaining 5 rockets landed, but what we do know is that one man was injured from shrapnel wounds, a man in his 30s. He was lightly wounded in the area of Ashkelon. And there were other people as well who suffered anxiety and other injuries running to their bomb shelters. Some damage was also caused in Ashkelon. And so overall, that was really quite a surprising event, given the nature of the activities, the IDF activities that are going on in the Gaza Strip. And we were sure that they'd somehow managed to secure most of these rocket launch sites. But apparently, in spite of the military activity that's going on in Gaza, and it's not insignificant, and the strategy that's being followed at the moment is slightly different from the strategy that has been followed, that was followed in the early days of the war, which means that now when the IDF is going in and cleaning out certain areas of Gaza, they're also staying there. They're not just going in and then withdrawing. Now the strategy is to move residents away from certain areas for the IDF to go in and maintain those positions, to stay where they are and not allow people to come back again in an attempt to try to keep certain areas as clean as possible. The problem, of course, is that it allows for certain psychological warfare to be waged, because immediately Hamas has said, oh, those areas where the IDF is going in and staying and where the IDF is bombing are exactly where the areas where hostages are being kept, and we are not going to remove the hostages from those areas. We will keep them there, and we will keep them exposed to whatever IDF activity is going on, and they will be heavily guarded while we are keeping them in these danger zones. So the strategy has changed. It also creates a certain psychological aspect, which is very concerning for us and for, of course, the hostage families in particular. But it all goes to show, and this is just coming back to the barrage of rockets that we endured last night, it shows that as much as we conduct military activities, and the military activities clearly have a certain impact, ultimately peace will only be achieved through dialogue and through agreement. And even though the military campaign might well lay the groundwork, it will not achieve peace.
But a critical part of it, though. I mean, there's no ways you're going to negotiate with, you could have negotiated with Hamas 2 years ago, given their strength.
Absolutely. There's no doubt at all that the military activity lays the groundwork, that it creates a certain a framework, that it creates a certain atmosphere. We've seen it with Lebanon as well. The extent to which Hezbollah have been decimated in Lebanon is not insignificant. It's led to the downfall of the Syrian regime. The consequences, the domino effect, has been absolutely significant and cannot be ignored. But ultimately, once that work is done, the final step really needs to be somehow negotiated from a position of strength as a result of the military activity, but it needs ultimately to be agreed upon.
The big story as well that we wanted to chat to you about is that the IDF has acknowledged discrepancies in the version of its explanation of an attack against a Gazan emergency vehicles 2 weeks ago. Just tell us about the story, because it is very confusing, and it just doesn't really come together for me.
So let's go back to the events of 2 weeks ago in Gaza. We understand that members of the IDF's Golani Brigade were stationed in Gaza and were keeping a watch on a certain incident that had taken place, where we understand that emergency vehicles, ambulances, and emergency workers came along in order to take care of a certain situation after the IDF had bombed a certain area. And according to what happened, and according to the accounts that we received of that particular incident 2 weeks ago, the IDF have said that there were 15 emergency workers, that 14 of them were killed, and that they were buried somewhere in that vicinity. One person survived, and that was really the story that came out from the IDF. What the IDF also said in its report was that the IDF patrol was surprised that the vehicles didn't have any lighting, that they somehow crept up on this IDF force that wasn't expecting them to come along. They had no visibility, there were no emergency lights or any lights at all, and that they were somewhat surprised, as a result of which they opened fire, and as a result of that fire, 14 people were killed, and as I said before, their bodies were buried in a grave somewhere nearby there. What has now come out is that the Gazans managed to gain access to that grave, and they took the bodies out. And on one of the bodies, a cell phone was found. And that cell phone happened to have video footage of the event, of exactly what happened. Somebody, one of those people who were killed, was actually filming the whole event. And that video survived the attack. and has survived the burial and has now come out and has been made public. And what is different about the IDF account and what we see in that video is that there were lights, there were emergency lights, that the vehicles were lit up. There can be little doubt when you look at that video that the vehicles were lit up and that they were visible from the lights. It was in the early hours of the morning, around 4 a.m. in the morning, so it was dark. And so what's now happened as a result of that is that the entire IDF account of what happened is being brought into question. Now, because of the fact that one of the bits of information, one of the facts has been incorrectly reported, it's sort of assumed that the entire report is fabricated and is inaccurate. And I think that, first of all, the IDF has acknowledged that there is this discrepancy, that there were lights in the video, whereas the IDF report said there were not lights. So that's already been acknowledged by the IDF, and a further investigation is being carried out. But I would like to just put a little bit more of a background to the story. Let's not forget that this is a war zone, that people get hurt and get injured in a war zone all the time, even people who might not necessarily mean any harm. But when you're in a war zone, things happen. And things happen particularly when, in the past, emergency vehicles have been used to carry out military activities. There is no doubt at all that ambulances and other emergency vehicles have been used to transport Hamas terrorists and have surprised IDF forces as a result of them giving some respect to those emergency vehicles. And as a result of all of those experiences, the IDF now has a policy of not giving that respect to the emergency vehicles, because they risk their lives by giving respect to emergency vehicles when they get used for terror and military activities. And that the world, while they might wish to judge this particular event by saying, oh, the IDF lied and there were lights and there were emergency lighting and the IDF should have been able to see all of that, and I think from the video that is clear, what the world doesn't wish to acknowledge is that the people jumping out of those ambulances may well have been Hamas terrorists. Nobody's really examined that. The IDF are insisting that some of those 14 people who were killed were in fact Hamas terrorists. And we do know that Hamas terrorists have doubled up as emergency workers during the course of this war. They've done both. And one doesn't really know which hat they're wearing at any moment in time, or maybe they're wearing both hats. Maybe they're trying to act as emergency workers and they're coming out to commit acts of terror. So it's very, very difficult in the heat of the moment for anybody to be judging what's going on for fear of risking their own lives. And I think that it's a little harsh right now for the IDF to be judged negatively and for people to say, well, it's clear that the IDF are targeting emergency workers. No, they're not. That's not clear at all. And one shouldn't jump to conclusions about what happened in one incident and try to smear an entire campaign as a result of that. So my view is that Hamas have shown themselves to target civilians, to use emergency vehicles for the purposes of military and terror activities. Nobody has criticized that so far. Nobody said a word about that. But one little small slip up by the IDF, and everybody's up in arms. And I think we need to take this all into proportion. It may well have been an inappropriate act, but it's a war zone, and things happen in a war zone, and we need to somehow expect that things happen in a war zone. If any of those soldiers acted inappropriately, I can assure you that the IDF will take proper care of that. The IDF has moral policy.
Yes, I think the issue is that the IDF does hold itself to a very high standard. And whereas, excuse me, everything you're saying is absolutely right, the only part of it that bothers me was that they weren't, it doesn't seem as though they were honest about the report. If they said there were lights, but we, you know, it wasn't authorized, we assumed it was Hamas, etc., then it would be a very different sort of a response, I think. The fact that it was uncovered afterwards, and then they had to acknowledge it. I think that's the problem. Strangely enough, it's more less the issue about them firing at this, at these vehicles than it is that they lied, which is quite strange. But that does seem to feel how it's landed. Anthony, I don't want to miss the next story, and it's already 8 o'clock. But just tell us quickly what happened with the UK ministers who arrived in Israel.
So there were two members of the UK Parliament who arrived yesterday in Israel, two ladies, both of whom have already some history of undertaking anti-Israel activities, one a lot more than the other. One is a lady who comes from a Chinese background. She has been kind of less active in an anti-Israel sense, but she's really been quite active to promote the fact that journalists in the Gaza Strip seem to have been badly treated by Israel, and her bent has really been all about journalists and how they get treated. Let's not forget that journalists have very much doubled up as terrorists in this particular war. The second lady comes from a Yemeni background, and she has been very anti-Israel in a lot of her activities. They arrived yesterday at Ben Gurion Airport. The Israeli government decided that they were not going to allow these two ladies to enter, even though they were members of parliament. They didn't come with an official parliamentary delegation. They came with some assistance, but really nothing really formal or agreed between the governments. It's created a major diplomatic incident because the Israeli government said, we will put you up in a hotel overnight. We will pay for your flight back to the UK. They didn't agree to the hotel. They didn't accept the offer of the hotel, but they were returned back to the UK, and they've returned safely now back to the UK. But of course, a major diplomatic incident has ensued. Do the listeners think that Israel is okay to be turning back members of a foreign parliament because they happen to be anti-Israel in the way that they behave, and especially now during a war situation? What do you think?
What do you think? 0618951019. I'll share what I think after I get some of your messages. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, it is 8:03. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.